Don't get in no trouble.
No, we're just trying to win this dance.
Right. You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astrotop.
We got the Refugees All-Stars, Robert Devin in the club, Wyclef Jean.
Shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her. Buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another 1/2 hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. Get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me. I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My crew slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math, you ain't half niggas at it. My man's claim true, you forget about it. Ho-ho, just a nuisance, like my influence. Well recognized, you a lie trying to do it. Got you told your lady, oops, we nuts, baby. Smooth and charismatic, automatic, you gon' save me. God bless the dead as my son survived. We strive to teach you, baby.
Welcome, this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9. I'm a bit late today because I was here in the studio trying to get things out of my USB. Couldn't get it out, but finally did it. So how's everybody? Nice day. And going to talk some astronomy now. In a few weeks, I'm going down to Washington State. Astronomers, remember a few months ago, there was confirmation that the Hanford Observatory, the LIGO Observatory in Hanford, Washington, and the one in Louisiana detected gravitational waves for the first time. Gravitational waves were predicted about 100 years ago. They are one of the prominent features of Einstein's theory of relativity, general theory of relativity. So he came up, one of the professors, or one of the astronomers, Dr. Michael Landry, he came up to SFU on a Saturday, SFU Surrey, and this was in a joint thing with Triumph here of UBC, to give a lecture on gravitational waves. And then we had the famous Kip Thorne come to UBC, and he gave a lecture too, so that was quite thrilling. So now I'm going down on August 9th. I'm going to tour the LIGO Observatory in Hanford, Washington. I asked Dr. Landry about it. He was so kind, so he invited me down. I'm going to have a tour, and then I'm going to interview him. So that should be exciting. So I'm going down. I might go further south after that. So you might get to hear the show in late August. So that's a great thing coming up. And school's starting again in September. I think it is. So Michelle Kunimoto, the famous, now famous UBC astronomy student, discovered four planets. Hopefully she'll be back from Montreal so I can interview her about her discovery of those four planets. So I'm going to talk more about Titan, the moon of Saturn. It's a fascinating moon. It's big enough to be considered a planet in its own right. It's the second biggest moon in the solar system. The biggest is orbits Jupiter. I think it's Ganymede. Hopefully it's Ganymede. And Titan is one of the few bodies in the solar system that has an atmosphere. So Earth, Venus, and Titan are the three prominent ones, I believe. So it's a very fascinating place. I'm going to talk a bit about that today. But first, let's talk about black holes. So in a July 28th article from NASA called New Star, so www.nasa.gov. As soon as you go to nasa.gov, there's a story that says chorus of black holes sings in x-rays. So I'm going to start on with the article right now. And so says the article, supermassive black holes in the universe are like a raucous choir singing in the language of x-rays. So I guess they give off x-rays. When black holes pull in surrounding matter, they let out powerful X-ray bursts. This song of X-rays, coming from a chorus of millions of black holes, fills the entire sky, a phenomenon astronomers call the cosmic X-ray background. NASA's Chandra mission, so it's a Chandra telescope, named after I'm not going to try to say his last name. I kind of got it in my head, but I'm going to mangle it. Anyway, it's a famous scientist before who laid the basis for the talk on black holes. So NASA's Chandra mission has managed to pinpoint many of the so-called active black holes contributing to this X-ray background. But the ones that let out high-energy X-rays, those with the highest pitched voices, have remained elusive. So before, scientists were able to just detect 2% of the high-energy X-ray background. But now, with their new methods, they are able to detect 35% of X-ray songs from black holes. So I'm going to continue on with the article. New data from NASA's Nuclear Spectroscopic Telescope Array, or NuSTAR, that's the name of the telescope, or they call it an observatory. That's a bigger than a telescope. It's called an observatory. Have, for the first time, begun to pinpoint large numbers of black holes belting out the high-energy X-rays. Or an astronomer speak, NuSTAR has made significant progress in resolving the high-energy X-ray background. So says principal investigator from Caltech Institute in Pasadena, Fiona Harrison. The principal investigator, so says Fiona Harrison, we've gone from resolving just 2% of the high-energy X-ray background to 35%. We can see the most obscured black holes hidden in thick gas and dust, and this will be described in an upcoming issue of the Astrophysical Journal. The results will ultimately help astronomers understand how the feeding patterns of supermassive black holes change over time. This is a key factor in the growth of not only black holes, but also the galaxies that host them. The supermassive black hole at the center of our Milky Way, which is 26,000 times the mass of the Sun, is dormant now, but at some point in the past, it too would have siphoned off gas and bulked up in size. So these are supermassive black holes, not solar mass black holes. As black holes grow, their intense gravity pulls matter towards them. The matter heats up to scorching temperature, millions of degrees, and particles get boosted to close to the speed of light. It could actually even be billions of degrees. Together, these processes make the black hole surroundings glow with X-rays. A supermassive black hole with a copious supply of fuel or gas will give off more high-energy X-rays. NuSTAR is the first telescope, or as I said before, observatory, capable of focusing these high-energy X-rays into sharp pictures. So says Fiona Harrison again, and quote, before NuSTAR, the X-ray background in high energies was just one blur with no resolved sources. To untangle what's going on, you have to pinpoint and count up the individual sources of the X-rays. And so says Daniel Stern, a co-author on the project at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, and quote, we know this cosmic background had a strong high-pitched component, but we still don't know if it comes from a lot smaller, quiet singers or a few with loud voices. So remember, black holes sing in the X-ray. And continue with the quote, now, thanks to NuSTAR, we're gaining a better understanding of the black holes and starting to address these questions. High energy X-rays reveal what lies around the most buried supermassive black holes, which are otherwise hard to see. So I guess when they say buried, they lie buried in gas and dust. It's hard to maybe search for or locate their signatures. In the same way that medical X-rays can't travel through your skin or can travel through your skin to reveal pictures of bones, NuSTAR can see through the gas and dust around black holes to get a deeper view of what's going on inside. with New Star's more complete picture of the supermassive black hole populations, astronomers can begin to puzzle together how they evolve and change over time. When did they start and stop feeding? What is the distribution of gas and dust that both feed and hide the black holes? So this article says that our black hole in the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way, has stopped feeding. So it's a comfortable 26,000 light years away. Sorry about that. And it's about 4.6 million times the mass of the sun. So apparently it stopped feeding. The team expects to resolve more of the high-energy X-ray background over time with New Star and better decipher the X-ray voices of our universe's rowdiest choir. So earlier I said it's 26,000 solar masses, our black hole at the center of our galaxy. I was wrong. It's 4.6. It's 26,000 light years away. New Star is a small explorer mission led by Caltech and managed by JPL for NASA's Science Mission Directorate in Washington. So, as I mentioned before, the California Institute of Technology is now the number one university in the world. So now I'm going to go on with an article that I had from many, many years ago. Actually, not many years ago, a couple years ago, 2014. So last week or a week ago, either a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I talked about the moon Titan. It's the biggest moon in the Saturn system. It is a smoggy thing. It's hard to see past its smoggy haze. Maybe it's like a Los Angeles. It's got smog in its atmosphere. But they peered through that. They've landed on the surface, and they discovered lakes of nitrogen and hydrocarbons. So that's very interesting. So Titan is just like Earth. It is a nitrogen-dominated atmosphere. Over 95% nitrogen in its atmosphere. That is the moon Titan. But unlike Earth, Titan has very little oxygen. And that's what Earth was like millions of years ago or billions of years ago. So they think Titan could be something like a young Earth and it could evolve. Could it or couldn't it? Well, a lot of the lakes and rivers in Titan on the surface are made of methane. So both Earth and Titan have nitrogen-dominated atmospheres, over 95% nitrogen in Titan's case. But Titan has very little oxygen. The rest of the atmosphere is mostly methane and trace amounts of other gases, including ethane. And at the frigid temperatures found at Saturn's great distance from the sun, the methane and ethane can exist on the surface in liquid form. So it's very cold there, and I think Saturn gets about 1% of the heat energy that Earth does, so you can imagine how cold it is. So for this reason, scientists have long speculated about the possible existence of hydrocarbon lakes and seas in Titan. Now I'm going to switch to an article I had about Titan. I talked about last week, but I didn't have the article in front of me, so now I do have the article. So what the scientists did in 2014, in June, just a little over 2 years ago, they were bouncing signals off Titan, and these were radio signals, some were light signals, and from the Cassini spacecraft. So what would happen, these signals would bounce off Titan, and they'd be bounced to Earth, where they would be received by the Deep Space Network, a large array of telescopes. I think it's in three parts of the world. So as the Earth spins, and some of it is in darkness, others would be able to receive the signal. So if one set or array of the Deep Space Network telescopes are on one side of the Earth, another array would be able to pick it up. So I think there's three different arrays on three parts of the Earth to make sure that they can receive signals 24 hours a day. So when I started this discussion, I started talking a little bit of spectroscopy, but I didn't really go into as much depth as I should. So now I'm going to, just off the top of my head, not any article in front of me, explain a little bit about spectroscopy. Well, I think in the 1800s, when scientists were puzzled about the structure of the atom, what they did know is sometimes they can get a spectrum, so they could receive certain wavelengths of light from a hydrogen atom. So if they pass gas or light through hydrogen gas, they could, if they took a spectrograph, and I'll explain a bit what a spectrograph is, they'd get a measurement of four distinct wavelengths. So what did these wavelengths correspond to? Well, we have to talk about the structure of the atom to try to understand what the wavelengths correspond to. So let's look first at the hydrogen atom and compare it to another atom, let's say nitrogen. So if we look at the planetary model of a atomic nucleus, before people thought that electrons orbited around the center of the atom, which is the neutrons and the protons. The electrons orbited much like, let's say, the planets would orbit, but that was a bit wrong. We can compare it in a way to the planetary model, but the reality with atoms is what they have is not orbits, but things called energy levels. So atoms occupy certain energy levels in an atom. So atoms have, like, let's say, a building. You can go from one floor to the other floor with the elevator, and one floor would be at a certain energy level, and the next floor would be at a different energy level. So this is what the atom has. It has energy levels, and each atom, let's say the hydrogen atom, its energy levels are different, spaced differently than the nitrogen energy levels in the nitrogen atom. So electrons occupy these energy levels. So in the case of, let's say, hydrogen, an electron in a higher energy level sometimes jumps down to a lower energy level. And when it does this, it emits a specific signature wavelength of light. And in hydrogen, for example, it emits all the time when the hydrogen in the hydrogen atom, when the electron jumps from a higher energy to, let's say, another lower energy level, it will emit a signature wavelength of light, a photon of light. And in nitrogen, let's say if it jumps from a higher one to the lowest, the wavelength of light it emits is a different wavelength. So in this way, hydrogen emits certain wavelengths. So that's why when they take a spectrograph or a prism, they shine light through a hydrogen gas, it will, when they have a machine called the spectrograph, it can measure four distinct wavelengths of light that tells scientists this is hydrogen. They are unique, these wavelengths of light, and hydrogen emits different wavelengths than, let's say, nitrogen or oxygen. So every atom has a specific signature of light wavelengths that it emits. And for example, if a photon hits a electron in a lower energy level, it will give it energy. This electron will then jump up to a higher energy level. And when they take a spectrograph, that wavelength of light that hit that electron and sent it jumping up, it will be missing from the picture that the spectrograph makes. So the spectrograph will take a picture of the wavelength or the prism of light, but if it went through hydrogen first, and the hydrogen atoms, let's say, when it jumps from a second energy level to third energy level, then it absorbs a certain wavelength of light that is unique, and scientists can tell, oh, well, these are the wavelength of light. This has to be hydrogen. So you can take a gas, you can say, this is a mystery gas. I don't know what this gas is. You shine light through it, and the spectrograph takes a spectrograph. It's called spectroscopy. So the machine takes a spectrograph, and the energy of certain wavelengths of light are missing because these have been absorbed by the electrons in the atom, and it's made these electrons jump from lower energy levels to higher energy levels. And sometimes an electron will be in a high energy level. It will jump down to a lower energy level just by itself, and it will emit a photon of light at a specific signature wavelength. So in this way, scientists can tell from the signature of the spectrograph which wavelengths of light are missing, they'll know, oh, that's nitrogen or that's oxygen or whatever. Spectroscopy lets scientists measure what type of gas they're looking at from the wavelengths of light that are missing in their spectrograph. So they have a prism, but there'll be dark lines at certain wavelengths, and it is at these wavelengths that are absorbed by the electrons to make them jump higher. So what Cassini does, sometimes it sends wavelengths of light, sometimes it bounces radio waves off the surface of Titan. So this is very far away, it's billions of miles, and these wavelengths of light are these signals are then bounced back to Earth, and they imprint the details of the gas or the material, the atom, the substance that the light went through, because it did absorb a certain specific wavelength of light. So what they're doing is Cassini was zooming towards a smoggy moon Titan, and it was sending radio waves and light waves through Titan's atmosphere, through it would hit the surface, and they would bounce back all the way to Earth in the deep space network. And when these were analyzed, this gives scientists information of Titan's atmosphere. So signals of radio can explore the physical nature of the atmosphere. They can even tell the density of the gas. They can tell the temperature. They can tell so many things. I'm not sure exactly how they could do this, but I have an inkling about the spectroscopy. But when they use radio signals, I'm not sure exactly. But what would happen sometimes, scientists here on Earth would bounce radio signals and other signals off the moon Titan, and these would be received by the spacecraft Cassini that was orbiting Titan. So in a May 2014 encounter, Cassini beamed radio signals over two of the largest bodies of liquid on Titan's surface, the seas Ligera Mare and Kraken Mare. On the first attempt, scientists were not sure whether the signals would successfully bounce off the lakes and be received on Earth, because they've tried it on other missions before, and I'm trying to look for the other mission. It's somewhere here, and when I come to it, I will tell you about it. But on other missions before, it wasn't successful. So they weren't sure if this, they were scattering experiments, they were reflective experiments. They were trying to answer a variety of questions on the large areas of the surface of Titan. Was it solid? Was it slushy? Was it liquid? Was it reflected? What was it made of? Okay, so now when I come back, we're going to talk more about Titan, the moon of Saturn, and hopefully we can make some sense of what this Cassini spacecraft is doing. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9.
With summer encroaching, I, the sun, attain the height of my powers. Now I will pass solar judgment on this pitiful city. Forests, burn! Ocean, burn! Yoga fest, burn! What's this? Discorder magazine. Ooh. Ah.
Discorder's July, August, summer issue featuring articles on Leisha Sets, Tempest, Eileen Bryant, Gal Grayson, and an art feature by Puppy Teeth, plus much more. Find Discorder around Vancouver at cafes, venues, record stores, and online at discorder.ca. Special thanks to this month's advertisers, the Astoria Audio Pile, Davie Street Party, Don't Argue Pizzeria, Hastings Crossings BIA, Castellano Block Party, Live Van, Pressing Matters, Redgate, Reggae Fest, the Rickshaw Theater, the Rio Theater, Rifflandia, Shindig, Victory Square, Vinyl Records, and Zipcar. It's not getting any zippier than that.
This alone shall be saved. As will the rest.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mob, rock on. I was just a young-
young boy living in the hub city. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had every talking about, boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super's boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast. My people singing, baby, where you at? Throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. But we know, don't stop, we won't stop. That's why I put it down for the west side.
That long ago,
oh no.
We were still in 40s out the liquor store.
Oh no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke, smoking roaches.
DJ Quick was the had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown. We had to burn this bitch on down.
One time for my was in incarceration.
Place a dime with you for having lots of patience.
For my sisters at the county field,
I got some Westside love for all you ghetto children.
Three times for my that passed away.
Thank you, TQ. We're on the west side at UBC, so we're going to get back to Titan. So let's talk a little bit about Titan. It's the biggest moon of Saturn, second biggest moon in the solar system. It has amazing lakes and rivers and a lot of interesting things. Okay, so in the atmosphere, let's talk about first Titan. Atmosphere. In the atmosphere of Titan, nitrogen and methane react to produce a wide variety of organic materials. Scientists believe that the heaviest of these materials fall to the surface, so they fall out of the atmosphere and they hit the ground of surface. Scientists believe that when these compounds reach the sea, so they have directed methane, they have found methane seas on Titan. When these compounds reach the sea, either directly from the air, falling from the air or via rain or through Titan's rivers, some of these substances are dissolved in the liquid methane. Then soluble compounds such as nitrates and benzene sink to the sea floor. So what a 2013 experiment found was they had a radar instrument on the spacecraft and they send radar signals through Titan, and the instrument detected echoes from the seabed floor and inferred that the depth of Ligera Mare, that's one of the seas on Titan, along Cassini's tract and over Ligera, the first ever detection of the bottom of a terrestrial sea, they were surprised to find depths in the sea as great as 520 feet or 160 meters at the deepest point along the radar track. The scientists used the depth sounding information to separate the contributions made to the sea's observed temperature by the liquid sea in the seabed, which provided insights into the respective composition. So says a scientist, Legal, and quote, "We found that the seabed of Ligera Mare is likely covered by a sludge of organic-rich compound." So this is very interesting now. The scientists have been doing this for a few years. They tried it on another mission before, I think quite a few years ago. It didn't work. But now they're getting success. So what they're doing is they're hitting signals off the surface of Titan. Some of these surfaces or some of these signals are going to the bottom of the lakes and the seas on Titan. And when these signals bounce off, some of them are received by the spacecraft, but some of them go over the billions of miles of space and are received by the deep space network, the three array of antennas here on Earth, and they can make measurements. There's also a lot of things they can do. For example, when they send signals, now I'm not sure how this is done, but they're sending signals through the atmosphere of Titan. And when these signals are retrieved or received on Earth, somehow they can decipher the temperature of the atmosphere, the density, a lot of different things. And it's just not when they're bouncing off the bottom or the surface of Titan or the bottom of the seabeds, but they are getting all kinds of information. And I did explain how the spectroscopy works. So, for example, if they shine a light through a gas, and they don't know, it's a mystery gas. Let's say it's just a gas of one compound. they can tell by using a spectrograph. It's called spectroscopy. They can tell what kind of element this is because each element has a unique signature. When light is shone through that gas, it absorbs or emits wavelengths of light that are particular to itself. So, for example, oxygen will have a different emission than hydrogen. So these are all known. So when they receive a signal of light, they go, ah, that's oxygen or that's hydrogen. So scientists are doing all kinds of things. So let's go more about the study. So the study, this was in 2014, the study also found that the shoreline around Ligay Mare may be porous and flooded with liquid hydrocarbons. The data span a period running from local winter to spring, and the scientists expected that, like the seaside on Earth, the surrounding solid terrains would warm more rapidly than the sea. However, Cassini's measurements did not show any significant difference between the sea's temperature and that of the shore over this period. Now, again, when we're talking about temperature in a place like Saturn or one of its moons, it receives about 1% of the sunlight that we do on Earth. So their temperature is very, very cold. But we can look at our moon also, and the lips of the craters on the moon, they don't receive any sunlight. The way that they're structured, their lips, there's no sunlight. Those can be the coldest places in the solar system. So something doesn't have to be so far away to be cold. And if we look at the moon on Jupiter, it's called Io. It's in a orbital resonance with other planets. That means it aligns with other planets in other moons of Jupiter on a regular basis. So when it aligns, and these moons will tug on Io's surface, and so will Jupiter tug on Io's surface. So it flexes Io's surface, much like you can have a paper clip and you bend it back and forth. It heats up. So that's what happens to Io's surface. So even though Io is very far from the sun, it receives a fraction of the sunlight that the Earth does. It's one of the hottest places in the solar system because of this gravitation that it feels from its sister and brother or sister moons and its home planet Jupiter. So very often, yes, things that are that far out, like in Jupiter orbit or the Saturn orbit, they will usually be cold, but they can be warm too, like Io. But here we're having very cold place. So scientists are looking at this from their local winter to spring when the sunlight is different and the tilt of the planet and the moon is different. And when we're talking about tilt, we can talk about Saturn. So what happens when Saturn, at a certain time of the year, its rings are facing head on to the sun. So this is the first time in the year, or one of the only times in the year, that its equator is exposed directly to sunlight, because in the other time, when the rings are tilted, they block the sun from reaching the equator. So if we look at our Earth, we have an Earth that is generally warmer. Yes, it is warmer at the equator, but in Saturn, you have these rings that block out the sunlight. And what happens is when our scientists are fortunate enough to get the rings that are tilting and they're facing head on to the sun, then they can do some wonderful science because those rings are not covering this equator and it's finally getting the heat that our equator gets. Now let's talk more about Titan. So I'm going to say something that one of the scientists says. His name is Steve Wall. He's a deputy lead of the Cassini radar team at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. It's a marvelous feat. And so says the professor, and quote, it's a marvelous feat of exploration that we're doing extraterrestrial oceanography on an alien moon. So what they're doing, extraterrestrial or oceanography, isn't that amazing? Titan won't just stop surprising us. But that's what they're using now in these other things for exoplanet, in other experiments. They are taking the light somehow, beamed off these exoplanets that orbit stars outside of our solar system, and they are discovering composition of the planets, I believe, but it's by spectroscopy, but I am not 100% sure. Now I'm going to go on with my other article. This is an article I kept from June 17th, 2014. It says, Titan flybys test talents of NASA's Cassini team. So in this one, they are bouncing signals off Titan, let's say radio signals or light signals, on their flybys, and they are revealing impressive details of Titan's surface. So these are radio signals, radar signals, and light signals that are hitting the planet or the moon Titan, being reflected or bounced off, and being received by the deep space network on Earth. So let's talk about a little bit more of what they did during a... Okay, so now what they did is they did an occultation where the signal was beamed from Earth through the atmosphere of Titan towards Cassini, and it the signal is sent from Earth this time. It's received on Earth, but it's also received on the spacecraft. So the information of how Titan imprinted in the signal as it passed through Titan's atmosphere, this signal encountered differences in temperature and density. So the tricky transmitted signal must be varied during the experiment, so it remains nearly constant when we're received by the spacecraft. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure why they would have to vary the signal so that it would remain constant. That's a tricky one. I'll try to find that later. So what they have to take into account is they have a rotating Earth. They have a rotating Titan. They have all that distance between it. And there's the sun. So the procedure successfully was used for 2 years, and the occultation lasted just a few minutes. And they have a lot of concerns. Like, for example, one of the concerns they have when they're bouncing these signals is something called a frequency lockup. So they have to lock up the signals between the ground on Earth and the spacecraft. They have to, and this is all while the spacecraft is moving, while Earth is moving, while Titan is moving. So it seems like it's a tricky procedure. Oh, here, I found it now. I wanted to talk about a 1990 mission. It was called a Magellan mission. I'm not sure if it was at Saturn or if it was at Jupiter, but it was tried in 1990 without success. So these signals are beamed billions of miles, billions of kilometers, and we have a rotating Earth, rotating Titan, Saturn gets in the way. All these things have to take a lot of effort, and sometimes they don't work. But in this particular one in 1914, the scientists sent the signals, and within seconds, they saw that the signal lock occurred. So something called a signal lock has to occur between the spacecraft in the Saturn system. So we're talking to a machine now, aren't we? We're talking to a machine that's rotating around Saturn, so they had to make a lockup first. And the predictions or the procedure was spot on. Data from the Titan atmosphere flowed in. New information that was monitoring the changing seasons on Titan. It's one of the scientists compared it to trying to hit a hole-in-one, except the hole-in-one is billions of miles away and moving. So the first attempt precisely predicted and compensated for the effect of Titan's moving atmosphere and on the uplink radio signal from Earth, and it worked to perfection. Okay, now I'm going to talk about another article. It's dated May 27th, 2014, and it's called Sunsets Reveal on Titan Reveal Complexity of a Hazy Exoplanet. Scientists with data from the Cassini spacecraft now understand the atmosphere of exoplanets and Titan by using Saturn's smog-enshrouded moon Titan as a stand-in. The new technology shows dramatic influence on how the hazy skies could give you an ability to learn about alien worlds orbiting distant stars. Light from sunsets of stars and planets separate into component colors called spectra. So like a prism, when you have a prism, you shine light through it. they break up into their component light. And these contain hidden info from studying these spectrals. These spectrums, scientists can obtain data from distant exoplanets or from the Saturn moon of Titan that orbits Saturn. Despite the staggering distance of other planetary systems, in recent years, scientists have developed techniques to collect spectra of exoplanets that orbit distant stars that are light years or tens or 20 or millions of light years away. When a world, for example, when a planet transits or passes in front of a host star as seen from Earth, some of the starlight travels through the exoplanet's atmosphere, and it changes subtly the light, but in measurable ways. It imprints info about the planets, and these can be collected by telescope. The resulting spectra record that imprint. Spectras enable scientists to tease out details about what exoplanets are like, such as aspects about temperature, composition, and structure of the atmosphere. Now, that's pretty amazing when you have a distant world, a distant planet, orbiting around a distant star, let's say 20, 50, 100, or thousands of light years away. Scientists can study how, just like they did with Titan, they can study how the light from that star, when it passed through the atmosphere of that planet, it was changed in subtle ways. When scientists examine the spectra, they can determine aspects of temperature, composition, density, and structure of the atmosphere. They exploit similar ways between exoplanet transits and the sunset on Cassini. These observations, solar occultations, allow scientists to observe Titan as a transiting exoplanet without having to leave our wonderful little Earth. Sunsets reveal how dramatic effect hazes can be. Many worlds in other solar systems, and Titan as well in our solar system, are blanketed with cloud and high altitude haze. Scientists can explore the similarities, how this obscuring atmosphere or this fog, this smog, they can explore it by either, like in Titan's case, they are sending radio signals, radar signals, and light through Titan. They're bouncing it off Titan, receiving it on Earth, and these signals, when they go through this atmosphere, through all these unique atomic substances, they can find out what they're looking at. So the cloud and haze are creating a variety of complicated effects that scientists must disentangle. And this is one of the things, all these things are very complicated. We are not on the surface of Titan. We're not close to Titan. And these exoplanets that are very far away. So the complexity of the signal needs to be filtered out, and then they can address the haze and they can address their models to understand these exoplanet spectra. So says a scientist called Robinson. I'm sorry, I don't have his first name. Previously, it was unclear exactly how hazes affected the observation of transiting exoplanet. So we turned to Titan, a hazy world in our own solar system that has been extensively studied by Cassini. So Titan, all the knowledge that they gained from the Titan system when they bound signals on Titan, received them on Earth, and saw how sending these signals through the atmosphere, how it changed the character of the signal. Now they're using this to study exoplanets that are very far away. From 2006 to 2011, Cassini visually mapped and infrared mapping of the surface of Titan, and they're using these models to compare it to exoplanets that are far off in other solar systems. With Titan as an example, they found the hazes high above some transiting exoplanets might strictly limit what their spectra can reveal about the planet. So again, we're talking about planets that are passing in front of their host stars. When this light from this host star goes through the atmosphere of the planet, it is changed. When scientists study this change signal, they can infer details about this planet, what it's made of. Isn't that interesting? Observers may be able to glean info from the planet's upper atmosphere, but on Titan, they can because it's in our solar system, they did experiments on different layers of Titan's atmosphere and on the surface and above the surface. So they found that Titan hazes are more strongly affected by shorter wavelength, bluer colors of light. Exoplanet spectra commonly assume hazes affect all colors of light in similar ways. So what Titan told us is it only affected the, not only, but more strongly affected the bluer color of light. Studying sunsets through Titan's hazes mean that people had dreamed up rules how planets would behave when seen through a transit, but Titan didn't get the memo, or so says Mark Marley, an astrophysicist from Ames Institute. So says the astrophysicist again, and quote, looks nothing like some previous suggestions, and because of the haze, the techniques that we have applied from Titan are now being passed on to study other worlds. So this implies that researchers could study atmospheres on planets like Mars, in Saturn, and different atmospheres around, no, sorry, Venus and Saturn, and they can use these to build models and to learn how to study these atmospheres of exoplanets that are far off in the solar system, or far off in other solar systems, tens, 20, 100,000 light years away. So this is Marco. Today we've talked about Cassini, and there's another one that the Cassini mission, and in particular, the moon Titan in the Saturn system. So next week, I was starting to look at now, I'm running out of time, but ice clouds herald fall at Titan South Pole. So there's a lot of interesting things to study. So thank you. This is Marco. You've been listening to Astro Talk. As I said, on August 9th, I will be in Washington State. I will be at the Legal Observatory in Hanford, Washington, where I will get the tour from Dr. Michael Landry. He will tour me around the facility, and I will talk to him about gravitational waves. So thank you. This is Marco. You've been listening to Astro Talk on 101.9.